we look upon the writings, we find that Baha'u'llah has enjoined on all to teach. I will tell you, our daily life often prevents us from really getting engaged in teaching the cause. Because we are so busy in our life, so busy, we have to do so many things. Even we have to do so many things for the faith that we have not time to teach the faith. And I think this is a very wrong way of approaching it. In fact, I remember some years ago, one of the national assemblies told us in Europe that we had appointed one of the believers who was a marvelous teacher to become a board member, auxiliary board member. We appointed him as an auxiliary board member. And after a few months, the National Assembly wrote to us and said, "What have you done? You have made him an auxiliary board member. He was one of our best teachers. And now he doesn't teach the faith. Can you imagine?" This is very wrong. In fact, one of the first things we say to our auxiliary board members all over now, at least, I always advise them, if you want to do anything, you must be teaching the faith yourself. It's no excuse because I'm a very busy man and I must not teach the faith. Teaching the faith is for everybody. We found in our home that we're very busy, and myself and my wife, but we have to teach the faith, no matter how busy you are. You have to have it, teach the faith. You cannot have an exception. There's no exception. This is the most important function of a Baha'i. And teaching is a personal thing. Unfortunately, things are done in the Western world very impersonally. And we have got used to the idea of teaching in an impersonal way, which will never be right. You have to teach on a personal level. We do most things in life impersonally. Have you noticed that? I don't know what life is like here. I'm not familiar with America. But I know in Europe, if you want to do anything, you won't put your name down for it. You give a box number in a newspaper so that nobody will recognize you. You know, it's impersonal. You don't say anything you want to do. You put a notice in the newspapers. You want to sell something. You want to buy something. You want to see somebody. You put a box number. Even when you want to fight with somebody, you don't fight him directly. You employ a solicitor, a lawyer, to fight for you. You see, everything is done impersonally here. But teaching has to be done personally. You have to come in contact with the soul. You have to love him. You have to then look into his eyes and love him with your heart until such time that you think he's now ready, and then learn a lot about him to see what he believes in. And then comes a time that you can say a little bit about the faith. Now, I want to also say something to you about teaching methods, because I feel, again, this is one of our problems. But this idea of teaching, now let me first say, this idea of teaching, every Baha'i teaches, is something that is so vital, like every day we must eat. It's just as important as that. The same way that we said every day we read the writings, every day we must engage somehow in teaching. And it's a daily thing. Chogi Effendi mentions that. It's a daily thing. It's not once a month going from one town to another. It is something daily. I remember another important thing that I want to mention here before I give you some examples of this is that Abdu'l-Bahá mentions this, that if we do not teach the faith, divine assistance will be cut off from us. I'm sure you've heard this. Now you realize that God is very loving to all creation. And yesterday we talked about forgiveness. You remember that? We talked about forgiveness. And how God's forgiveness, what things it can do with it. And I'm sure that God forgives all the things that people do. But there are certain things which to a Baha'i he cannot do. You see, God's assistance reaches the whole of the this creation. If ever for one moment the assistance of God is cut off from people, they are not able to exist. The assistance of God reaches all creation. And God does not withhold His assistance from any human being. As long as they live, He's assisting them in whatever they do. If you go the right way, He assists you. If you go the wrong way, He'll assist you. Even the enemies of the faith are being assisted. Because God does not interfere in our actions. We have the free will. He shows us the way, yes. He sends His messengers, He shows us the way. He throws light upon our path. And He says, this is the right way to come. But it is up to you to choose it. And if you go this way, He'll help you. If you go the opposite way, He also will help you. It's like the engine in a car. The engine does not decide which way to go. But it will give you the power whichever one you decide to go. This is how God acts with us. This is how He... And now, He acts in this way. His assistance reaches all humanity. But it will not reach a Baha'i. Now imagine this, who does not teach the faith. And this is when the Baha'i becomes frustrated in his life. I become frustrated in my life. I become unhappy. Since I've become a Baha'i, I've become unhappy. Since I've become a Baha'i, I have all kinds of problems. It's the divine assistance which must come to us. And I can assure you that most of the problems that we have in our daily life or in our anything we do can be and will be resolved if we become so much, throw ourselves into the field of teaching every day. Then things will happen to us. Great things will happen. One will change. Now, I'm not saying that one should say, oh, well, I have a lot of problems in my life, so I better go and do a little bit of teaching so that my problems may be solved. But I can assure you that many of our problems will be so removed from the scene because you will be elevated into a different world and these problems will sort themselves out. It will completely go into the background. Now teaching, which is personal thing. I was talking about somebody in one of these gatherings some years ago, and a woman came to me and she said, look, she said, I have become worried since you have been saying these things, that we must teach the faith every day, and if we don't teach the faith, God's assistance will be stopped from us. I said, I didn't say that. It's Abdu'l-Bahá who says this. Oh yes, she said, I'm worried still. I'm still, in any case, I'm worried about it. And she said, I am a very reserved person. I can't go out and talk to the people about the faith. I feel very embarrassed. I cannot teach personally. And now she said, what shall I do? I am worried, he said. She kept on saying this. I said to her, did you say you're worried? She said, yes. I said, that's very good. Keep on worrying. That's your solution to your problems. Really, and keep on worrying. This is a very good solution. If ever we are brought to the point of worrying about something, you're going to do something about it. Do you know that? When you find in your daily life, it's the same thing. If you lose your job or if you your family has some problem and you begin to worry, then you are going to put one foot in front of the other and something will happen. Well, this lady went away and she came back again. She said, I can't rest. We'll have to do something, she said. She said, I'm very reserved. I can't talk about the faith to anyone. So eventually, after talking about it, mentioned to her that, look, you can go and even though that you say you are very shy or reserved or whatever it is, go out every day. And she said, that's a good idea. She said, I will give 1 hour a day for Baha'u'llah. This is a marvelous example. I think we should remember that. Why not give 1 hour a day to Baha'u'llah for teaching? 2 hours a day. Maybe, but the minimum. And she said, I'll spend some time shopping. I'll spend some time at home. Why not give 1 hour a day to Baha'u'llah for teaching? and discipline yourself. And she said, I will go out. And she went out. She said, I'll go to a cafe. And I'll sit there. And she said she went to a cafe for 2 or 3 months, regularly. And the next time I saw her, she told me this. She said, it doesn't work. She said, I went there for 3 months, every day. I sat there, and many people came in the cafe and sat in front of me on the same table, shared the table. And she said, I could never bring myself to tell them anything about the faith. And she said, it doesn't work. I've given it up, she said. Now you see what happened in here really, and this is another lesson we learn, a very marvelous lesson. You know, God, Baha'u'llah says that once you say you are a Baha'i, and once you enter the faith, He will test you. And always we are being tested, all the time. Remember that. As Baha'is, we are always tested. Now, it's not something that Baha'u'llah has invented and say, I'm going to test the Baha'is. In fact, testing. This is nothing new. This is a law of creation. This is a law of creation. Baha'u'llah mentions in his writings, God will test everything. He says, I will split a hair into 1,000 pieces. These are almost the words of Baha'u'llah. And each piece I will test. Now, test actually is a law of nature. You go to nature and you find tests. I'll give you an example of this. As long as you're sitting, nothing happens to you. But the minute you move, the air will resist you. If you go on a bicycle, have you noticed? When you are going on a bicycle, do you see how the air will resist you? This is nature. This is test. You are being tested. And the faster you go, the greater are the tests. The greater is the resistance. You see these aircrafts which are built up, which go twice the speed of sound. They go so fast that the air will resist it so much that the metal gets red hot. And they have to have a cooling machine inside to cool it off all the time. Because it goes very fast. Nature will test it all the time. When Baha'u'llah says, I'll split a hair into 1,000 pieces and test it, this is true. Because if you look at the atoms, they are all the time under test. Each atom inside it goes through this cycle. Test is part of life. Every one of us are tested. Every day, without knowing it maybe. When you become Baha'i, especially. When you sit in a local spiritual assembly, we are tested all the time. It all depends how you look at your friend across the table. Just look at her like this. That's enough. I'm being tested. You know? You think of her, of him in a wrong way. Not with love. Because Abdu'l-Bahá says the standard of consultation is love. Now if I look at somebody when he says something and I want to hit hard at her, you know how it is? Hit hard. Saying such a thing. I'm being tested. Hit hard in my heart, I mean. You know, I hope we don't get to action. But it's no use also to cover it up and be very nice and smiling. And then you hate in your heart, or dislike in your heart. That is what matters, what's in our heart. You see how we are tested? And so I am tested. And when I am tested, I cannot progress anymore. When you cannot pass the test, but if you pass the test, do you know what will happen? In our lives, when you are ever high, when you pass the test, then greater field of service you enter into it. You will get to do greater service to the faith. You will want to do that. And as soon as you enter there, your tests become greater. Just like somebody who will go faster. Just like the aircraft which goes faster. Your tests becomes greater. And this is why people who have had not the capacity to pass the test. If they are in a higher position, higher functions, higher duties, they could easily destroy their souls. It's like a person who is flying in an aircraft. You see, if I'm standing on this platform and if I fall, well, I may hurt my knee. But if I'm flying in an aircraft and fall, that's the end. So if I work in a local spiritual assembly or a national spiritual assembly and I have all these ambitions in my heart and I'm not able to do the things right and I am being always, don't pass the test, I might hurt myself a little bit. I might become irritated, I might become cause of problems, but it is not fatal. And this is why those people who were close to the center of the faith, those who were close to Baha'u'llah, like man who flies in the aircraft, or those who were close to Abdul Baha, or those who were close to Shoghi Effendi, in the world center, they, if they had slightest impurities in their lives, if there was any feeling of ambition in their hearts, that little ambition will be magnified and will destroy them. You see? This is the history of our faith. This is why people who work very close to the center of the faith, a little bit of ambition, they will be destroyed. There is no room for ambition in the faith. And especially those who served near the center of the faith, their criterion must have been servitude. Absolute servitude, like Abdul Baha. He was safe. The purest branch was safe. The greatest holy leaf was safe. Because their standard of life was servitude. Utter servitude and self-effacement. But the other family of Baha'u'llah, they all had ambitions. They wanted to be leaders. They wanted to be respected. They wanted to be honored. They wanted to be somebody. None of them endured and none of them could last. They all perished, destroyed themselves. They were very close to the center of the faith. But there must have been a lot of other ambitious people and in the faith. Locally, nationally. Well, they hurt each other and hurt themselves, but it is not necessarily going to be fatal. So you see, friends, one of the things to bear in mind is that tests come our way, always. I remember somebody said, there was a very outspoken, beautiful woman who passed away, a marvelous person who became great. She brought so many people into the faith in England. But she was outspoken and she was. And she used to say, you know, when I was not a Baha'i, I had no problems. She said, I had no problems with people. I was very happy with everybody. I had no problems. But as soon as I became a Baha'i, then problems appeared after the other, you know. And this may be in one sense true if you are not able to cope with it. If you are not able to really approach people with a loving attitude and pass the test, God always tests us. Now this woman that I was talking about, who was sitting in a cafe for 3 months, and people came in front of her and sat there, and eventually she couldn't say anything, and she said, although I trusted Baha'u'llah and relied on him, he said, go out and I will assist you. We said he didn't assist me. Now this is why how we are tested. God tests us to find out how much faith we have in Him. This is true. When you arise to serve the faith, you teach and nothing happens. And then you say, well, it doesn't work. So what happens? Really, you're losing your faith in Him. This is how He tests you. And when I pointed this to her, she said, you are right. She said, I've been tested. Of course. She said, it's my fault that this didn't work out. It is not Baha'u'llah's fault. It's my fault. Because I was not dedicated enough, I was not pure enough, I was not taking Baha'u'llah with me every day. It's my fault. And she said, now that you say, I'm going to sit there every day. I'm going to go every day, 1 hour a day. And I will go if it is necessary for years. I will not give it up. And if anything does not happen, it's my fault. And she went. And you know, she was telling us the story after 2 or 3 weeks. She said, a woman came along and sat in front of me. She said, I couldn't say anything, of course, to her. But she looked at my ring. And she said, what is this strange lines on your ring? Oh, she said, I became so nervous. I couldn't say a word now. She said, I was absolutely nervous. And I began to stammer. I began to stammer. And the more I became nervous and stammering, this woman became more interested. You see? She said, what is it? Well, I think she told her very little, and she said, look, you better come in here, somebody will explain this to you. And well, I can tell you, this woman is a Baha'i. And this other lady is no longer a shy, reserved person. She is one of the best teachers. She's going around. And you know, it's like a child who has never had a food before. You give him a little taste of it. Once he gets the taste, he likes it then. And then it becomes a habit for him. This is the way teaching is. And I feel the idea of 1 hour a day, or 2 hours a day, or 3 hours a day, whatever you like, you choose, is a marvelous idea for giving ourselves to Baha'u'llah for teaching, personal teaching. Now, it is very important that we must remember the difference between teaching and proclamation of the faith. And this is something, again, that I think, in most communities that I am familiar with, we are mixing up the two. And as a result of this, we are harming rather than helping. You see, I feel that many people who hear about the faith and they don't come to follow it up is because of the unwisdom of the Baha'i teacher. We say the wrong things at the wrong time. We say too much. We kill him off in the first encounter. Really. We kill him off in the first encounter. And this happens, I believe, a great proportion of people who hear about the faith and do not come in is because of the unwisdom of the friends, of our teachers. And I will explain to you what I mean by this in practical terms. The first thing which happens is that we are so used in doing impersonal teaching that we think when I hold a public meeting in a town and I advertise it and people come there to hear about the faith, I think I'm teaching the faith there. I'm not. That is not a platform for teaching. If you begin to teach the faith there, you are going to do some harm. Now, I'm going to explain this to you, because I'm sure some of you may be surprised to hear this. Of course, when you go behind the radio, television, and the newspapers, you cannot teach the faith there. You can proclaim, you can give the message of Baha'u'llah. It's very different from teaching. To give the message of Baha'u'llah, yes, you do that. In a public meeting, in a hotel or somewhere, you hold it and you advertise it and people come there. Because people who come to the public meetings, they have never heard of the faith before. Or you must assume they have never heard of the faith before. You cannot teach a person that you do not know. That's a basic principle. But you can give him the message. That's all you can do in a public meeting, is to give him the message of Baha'u'llah, what it is. But we must not make an attempt, in my view, to teach them there. It's very different from giving a message and teaching. Very different, completely different. To give a message, yes, there is a public meeting, you are behind the radio, behind the television. There are certain things we must remember to do and certain things not to do when you are giving the message. I'm just talking about proclamation activities, like giving the message of Baha'u'llah in a public meeting. Remember, I'll tell you another story which perhaps will illustrate this. There was a man who for 10 years was telling me did not become a Baha'i. And I asked him why was this. He said the first public meeting I went to, somebody was talking about spiritual things, said spiritual assembly, spiritual this, spiritual that. Several times he used the word spiritual. And he said, I thought Baha'is are spiritualists. And I didn't like spiritualists. So any time during these 10 years that people talked to me about the faith, I said, this is not for me. You see how one innocent word could get into somebody's mind in the wrong way and deprive him of coming close to the faith. Well, I'm not saying it was bad to say spiritual things, but this man got the wrong end of the stick. People who have never heard of the faith before, never heard of it before, if you give them a talk which is full of new things. It's too much. They are going to hear some things which they do not maybe understand or may do not accept. And you always remember the things that you do not accept. If you put yourself in this place, you go to a meeting somewhere, meet some people. They are going to talk about their ideology. What remains with you are the things that you do not accept. Now, say for instance, now you go out today, hold a meeting, public meeting, invite people there, and somebody stands up and talks about the faith. Innocently, very innocently. Say for instance, do it this way. Say, you know what the Baha'i faith is? It's the faith of love. We love everybody. We love each other. Yeah, do that a couple of times. People who have no spiritual background, they're going to say, these are the people that we were hearing about. You know, this laxity in their moral standards is such that they say they love each other. Now you see, you have to be very clear of what you're saying. You have to be so clear in what you're saying that it will not give people the wrong impressions, the wrong things. And therefore, we come to this conclusion. That in such a talk, which is given to the public, giving them the message of Baha'u'llah, not teaching them, we must be concise, we must weigh our words, we must not confuse the mind with a lot of names and histories, starting from Shiraz and the Bab and then the Siachal and Tehran and Baha'u'llah and Adrianople and Akka and Constantinople and the house and the Abdul Baha and Shoghi Effendi and the House of Justice and the teachings and the laws. This, you're killing him. You're finished with him. You're trying to give him the message. You're not teaching him here. You're giving him the message. Now Shoghi Effendi tells us how we should give the message. He says you should follow the example of Abdul Baha's talks in Europe and America. You read the talks of Abdul Baha in Europe and America. Do you know what it is like? It's 10 minutes, sometimes less. And if you take out the 10 minutes talk. And what does he say? Never a controversial subject. Never a theological subject, which somebody could come and argue with you. If you ever create a person who comes and argues with you when you are giving the message, then that's the end of it. We must give the faith when you give the message in a public meeting, should be so simple. So simple. And talk about something that people cannot disagree with. So that when the man leaves the hall, he will say, well, I agree with this. That's good enough. You've done a good job. Remember, you are not teaching him the faith. Look at what Abdul Baha said. I'm saying you should say Baha'i. You should say the word Baha'u'llah. But please, don't use the word Abdul Baha and Shoghi Effendi and all the rest of it. You're confusing the man. Just Baha'u'llah is enough. What is the difference? And then what you can say, as Abdul Baha said, you know, if he ever wanted to say something about Baha'u'llah, and he said Baha'u'llah has come in Persia, he has brought us these teachings, and that many people have changed as a result of this, their hearts have changed, they have become beautiful people, and today I want to talk to you about one of the teachings or two of the teachings of Baha'u'llah. And that's it. And what he said, it was something that nobody could disagree with. Now this is giving the message. But what we do, we go to teach the faith there in a public meeting. You can't do that. And I feel this is one of the problems we have. One of the major problems we have is this. We have to know how to give the message. You go and meet somebody in the streets, you want to tell him about the faith? You can't teach him there. You have to give him the message in a very nice way, in your own way. Whatever you say has to be simple. To attract him to yourself, to attract him to the cause. By all means, you can talk about some teachings, there it is, but not to go involve yourself in like a football match. You say something and he says something else and you say something and he refutes and you refute, then that's the end of it. Our teaching is different from this proclamation and giving the message. How different it is. Teaching, I'll tell you quickly now, in 2 or 3 minutes. You know, teaching, if you want to teach somebody, and this is what Baha'u'llah has said, this is what Abdul Baha has said, you must know that person. You must come to know him, you must love him, and sometimes maybe you have to approach him for months in your spiritual arms, you must embrace him, pray for him. And then, when you know, and then you begin to know him, and then you know what he believes in. How can you ever teach the faith to somebody without knowing what his beliefs are? Is he a Muslim? Is he a Christian? Is he an atheist? Is he an agnostic? What ideas he has? And then, having known all these things, and having loved him, and having attracted to him, you can bring him to your home and give him a cup of coffee, and there you can sit down, and then Baha'u'llah says, give him a little thing, not too much. Just a little. He says, when you're dealing with a child, you give him milk, not a big meal. If you give him a big steak, he's going to go. You must decide what is then the best thing to give it to him. What's the best thing? It's just like his doctors. I know, for instance, in our family, my wife is very fond of this homeopathy, and I think it's a very good way of dealing with medicine and medical things. Now, how do they do it is that the doctor will recognize in you what you need to stimulate you, and he gives you a little bit of it. And that little thing which he gives you stimulates you is ready for the next dose tomorrow, in a few hours. And it's the same thing with the faith. You must know the person in wisdom and tell him some things. And sometimes you must not tell him some things. And even if you ask you a question, if you tell him something, it will be too much for him. It's going to put him off. You don't have to answer every question. You have to be able to bring him back to square one, which is the origin of the faith. It's the same thing with any profession. If you are a carpenter and somebody comes to you and he says, look, I don't know anything about carpentry, but I want to make this table with you today. You won't let him to make this table with you today because this fellow doesn't know how to hold a saw in his hand yet. You have to teach him first, prepare him for it for months before you can say, now this is the way you make the table. It's the same thing with the faith. If he has a basic question which is far ahead of him, you have to bring him back to the origin and try to begin to teach him. There are many things, and this is not a platform, I'm afraid, for explaining how to teach the faith. But in Europe, I'm hoping that as we go back now, and in some countries in Ireland, we've had some seminars for this, of how to teach the faith. And it has been, I think, useful. Because it's essential to know so many things. I'll give you one example of this and then I'll close. One person came to us, a woman, she said, I have a friend. And I have met him, she said, only a few days ago. I've told him about the faith. And I want you to talk to him. I said, well, I can't talk to him unless I know what he believes in. How can I tell him anything? Oh, she said, he just knows about the teachings. He's an open-minded person. He's an educated person. Anyhow, he came to our house and we sat down and it wasn't in our house, it was somewhere else. He came in and he said, well, look, I've heard about your teachings and I like it. And I saw he's a very enlightened man, a businessman, very educated and so on. But he said, one thing I cannot accept. I want my freedom to drink alcohol if I want to. Nobody's going to tell me I shouldn't. I know when to stop and I know I'm an adult and this and that. Now, what am I going to do with him? If I begin to tell him all the bad things about alcohol, he is going for hours to argue with me. When we are going to enter into argument like a football match again, backwards and forwards, he says it and I will say it and this is no use. But you know, if this man becomes a Baha'i, this would be no problem for him. He'll give it up. Isn't that right? This will be finished. It's no problem. Now for me to try to explain to him the good points and the bad points is very premature. So what I said to him, which was surprising, this lady was surprised. I said, don't worry about alcohol. It can be resolved. Oh, we can resolve this way. Now this man thought, I'm saying that we can give him a special dispensation. But you know, it is true, it can be resolved. I said, let us talk about other things, which are fundamental things. You don't have to answer every question which comes to you. And then you involve yourself ahead of time, like this carpenter who involves himself in making a man who doesn't know how to hold a saw in his hand to make it. If somebody comes to you and he wants to know about electricity, you can't tell him what electricity is. You tell him, go to college for so many years, learn mathematics and physics, and then come to me, I'll tell you what electricity is. It's the same thing with the faith. If somebody jumps ahead of you You have to bring him back to the origin. These are some of the techniques that we have to have in teaching the faith. You have to be wise in teaching the faith. Well now friends, I think we are far exceeded our time, huh? And that we will probably come back again this afternoon, maybe. We'll see what will happen. What time it is, Mr. Chairman? 1:30. Oh, you have to eat very fast. This is one thing.
Oh, I see. There are a lot of questions in here. And well. Well, I'm beginning to feel
a little sad, because I think the time is coming soon that we will be departing. I suppose you're all going tomorrow? Some of you probably will be here, but some of you will be gone. And but it has been a marvelous time. I really have enjoyed every minute of it, I must say, being with the friends. And let us go straight away into the subject we were talking. It was about teaching, if you remember. And I was explaining that one of our problems, I believe, is that in our methods of teaching, that we have to learn. We have to learn, first of all, a difference between these two aspects of presentation of the faith. One is the giving the message and proclamation, and the other is personally teaching and confirming a soul, which is a very different thing altogether. Now you see what I meant when I said that if you go into a public meeting and you begin to teach the faith, as we often do at our homes and firesides, then you could in fact say things which could put people off who are not, you do not know them. You do not know their feelings, their ideas, their backgrounds. And that what we should do is to adapt our talks to their condition by giving them those teachings which are pleasing and which are not controversial, don't open up controversial subjects or theological subjects when you are giving the message, but just really attract them to the cause, attract them to yourself, by giving them something of the teachings which they could leave the room with it and say, that was very nice. But when we're teaching the faith, well, as I mentioned, we have to do things, we have to warm up the person with the love of God. And another thing which is very important in teaching is put yourself out of it, really. Let us not bring ourselves into it. The minute you bring ourselves into it, then this becomes a barrier. We must always, whenever you teach the faith, you must never go alone. And this is one of the very basic principles. Never go alone to teach. Always bring with you Baha'u'llah. And this will enable us to then win the hearts. But Baha'u'llah, it's not always easy to bring Baha'u'llah with us. I want to also mention that. He does not come with us unless we let him. We must let him to come with us. You might be surprised to hear this. We must let him to come with us. He cannot come otherwise. You see a generator of electricity, a generator. The generator is pouring its energies in the network, in the wires, pouring it. But not until you connect up your lights and your instruments to it, will it ever enter into it. It will not be able to energize it unless you let it, unless you open the way, unless you switch it on, unless you connect it to it. It is not the function of the generator to connect something to itself. If you leave a lamp beside the generator for 100 years, the generator cannot say, well, this is really pity, this lamp is sitting beside me, I better connect it to myself. This is not its function. We have to connect it. As soon as you connect it, the energies will come. And it's the same thing with Baha'u'llah. Baha'u'llah cannot come to us unless we open the way for him. This is a very basic principle. He says, love me that I may love thee. Love me that I may love thee. If thou lovest me not, my love can in no wise reach thee. Know this, O servant. This is exact words of Baha'u'llah. Love me that I may love thee. If thou lovest me not, my love can in no wise reach thee. He doesn't say, if you don't love me, I don't love you. He says, if you don't love me, my love cannot reach you. If you have not switched on the light, he's telling us, the power cannot come through it. It's very simple. And so here is where we have to allow Baha'u'llah to come with us in all our activities, in all our services. No matter what it is we do, anything that a Baha'i does, if it wants to bring results and fruits, whether it is typing a letter, whether it is building a house for the faith, whether it is making a cup of tea in the kitchen, not until we are able to attract the power of Baha'u'llah to ourselves, can it ever be effective. Now, I have no idea how long we can talk together, but I hope sometime we can talk about this, drawing from the power of Baha'u'llah. But if there is chance, we might talk about it. If there is not, you can read the writings. And when you read the writings, the answers are there. That and the only thing I would like to mention here is this, that no Baha'i can be successful in anything he's doing unless and until he has Baha'u'llah with him. And as I said, he cannot come to us just like this. We have to prepare the way for him. One has to read the writings in the morning and in the evening, you know. One has to say the obligatory prayers. One has to read the history of the faith, the history of his revelation. One has to draw closer to him. And then one has to serve the faith. Very important thing that we talked about it this morning. And one has to live the life so that he can come to us. But one thing that I must say here now, and this is important, and please don't forget this point. This is a very important point. God, I mentioned the first day, is very forgiving. We must not think, oh, I can't do it, I have to do all these things, I have to read the writings, I have to say the prayers, I have to teach the faith, and if I don't do that, nothing will happen. I think in the writings, you can read it yourself, you take one little step forward in the right direction, in any of these things, and God will come to you 1,000 yards forward. Once your heart is pure, and once your intentions is pure, then that is a beginning. And we must never become feeling frustrated, because Baha'u'llah looks upon our hearts, not upon your actions. This is another thing you must remember. He mentions himself, he says, how many a people who have been fasting day and night, or days and after days, but their fasting is not acceptable unto God, because probably there was not a little bit of impurities. And then he says, how many a people who have never fasted, and that God accept them as if they have fasted. Everything depends upon our motives and upon our intentions. And once the heart is pure, the distance between you and Baha'u'llah then is very short. Once the heart is pure, there is no distance. And someone was saying before we broke up for lunch, and I think I want to clarify this point. When we talked about we have to teach the faith every day, true. And this person thought that you must tell about the faith every day to somebody. No. You might go for a month every day out and you won't find anybody to teach. But the very fact that your motive is to teach, that is acceptable to God. You go out with the intention of teaching. You make the effort. Maybe for a month you're looking at a person who is your neighbor every month, every day, and you pray for him. That is in the steps in the right direction. We must not become rigidly thinking in that way, that you must talk about the faith to someone today. If you don't do it, you have failed. On the contrary, once the heart is moved that you want to do something for Baha'u'llah, and you want to give an hour for him, and you go out, and even if it, like that woman who went there every day, sat there, said nothing. Now that was marvelous. That she did her work. And I think we should do the same thing. That the heart must be right, the motive must be right. Abdul Baha, in one of his talks, has said that if a person has, say for instance, a person is very poor, but his heart wants and begs God to give him money so that he could build a house of worship. He says, "Oh God, I love to build a house of worship. If I had money, I would pay all the costs of building a house of worship for God." Abdul Baha says, this poor man, even if he doesn't get the money to build a house of worship, God will accept from him as if he has built a house of worship, because his intentions are pure. This is what God goes by. And then he says, should he ever, God give him the money and build a house of worship? Well, that's very meritorious. Now imagine, he builds it. But there is a possibility, he said, that God will not accept from him as much as in the former case. Because he might one day say, I built this. And then that's finished. You bring I into it, it'll be finished. Really, that's true. There is no room for I in the faith. Remember this also. The faith does not harbor egotistical personality. It is, and this is why the authority is left in the hands of institutions of the faith. The elected institutions of the faith have the authority. The local assembly has an authority to decide, to make a decision. No one else has a right to make a decision or to give. Now I can mention this to you in here, for example, that we have, as you know, in the faith, two types of institutions, the elected and the appointed institutions. The authority is with the elected institutions of the faith. The other institutions of the faith, which is that of the counselors and the board members and so forth, and the assistants, they have no authority. They have a sacred function, but no authority. The authority lists with the institutions of the faith, and that we all will obey those that authority. So you see, individuals are cut off here. And this is one of the blessings which enables us all to vie with each other in servitude. In servitude. Abdul Baha says that it is not possible to serve God because God is exalted above our service. He says, if you want to serve God, you will have to serve the friends of God, the beloved of God, the friends, the believers. And this is, I think, this is why Abdul Baha says, this is the thing which I feel is the most beautiful thing he has said for all of us, as a guide, as a lesson. He says, make me as a dust in the pathway of thy loved ones. And the loved ones of God is the person who may not have any knowledge, may not have any understanding of the faith as much as you have or I have, but he is the loved ones of God. Just the believer who says, I believe, and he or she becomes a Baha'i and throws herself into the cause of God. And as I said this morning, we look into each other's faces and we see a beautiful sign of Baha'u'llah. And that is the loved ones of God. So friends, these points that are very important in teaching. Now, I'm not going to talk any much more about teaching and how to teach the faith and how important it is. You all know this. But I would say that if you wanted to forget everything that I have said this weekend, you can forget all of these things that I have said. Remember one thing. Remember two things. Or three things, huh? Two or three things. Four things. One thing is, remember this. We must always draw nearer to Baha'u'llah. Closer to him. Bring him with us in everything we do. Turn to him with a pure heart. And if we can't do it, I think the first step to it is to read the writings in the morning and in the evening. and then serve the faith. Just don't read it and sit there, but then serve, then go out, then do something. Give an hour to Baha'u'llah. And then things will change. Things will change. So, one of the, talking about teaching again, I wanted to mention another aspect. Teaching, so you can see the difference which exists between teaching and proclamation of the faith, which are really for different purposes. The proclamation of the faith is designed to bring the faith into the notice of the public and give it prestige. Teaching is to confirm people. Personal teaching is to confirm people for the purpose of confirmation. Although both of them help people to recognize Baha'u'llah, but to carry them out, they are two different functions. And so where is the place for teaching? Let us find out. Where is the place for teaching for a believer? The place for teaching is in your hometown. Because that's where you can make friends. If you want to proclaim the faith, well, you might travel around. You can go here and there. But that's not, you cannot teach there really. If you want to teach, you have to spend time to make friends with your workmates, with your neighbors, with your fellow beings, human beings in the town, that you come in touch with them. And so, the place to teach the faith is in your own town. But unfortunately, again, there is another, well, misconception, if you like to say, that some people I know in Europe think that if they want to teach the faith, they have to leave their town and go to another town, and they call it travel teaching. Now, it's all right. I'm not ever, don't take it that I'm saying against travel teaching. It's really, in travel teaching, you can do something. You can help the believers in that locality. You can go there into the streets in that town and tell the people and give the message to the people. You can give the message. In travel teaching, you can give the message of Baha'u'llah to people. But it is not easy to teach them because you don't know them. You are not having a home there to attract them to yourself. Also, you must remember, it's possible, of course, it's possible that you come across a person straightforward. You must also remember this. Who is so open, who wants to know about the faith. Then you don't have to wait to make friends with him. He's already friends with you. He says, tell me about the faith. I want to know about it. Then you invite him to your home. And then you don't rush into telling him everything. Just find out what he believes in. Let him say it. This is very important. Let him say things. Baha'u'llah once said that, look at the master. He is an example, he said. When somebody comes to him, the master first listened to him. And he listens with such genuine interest that the person thinks that Abdul Baha is learning from him an awful lot. And he says he lets him say a lot of things. And at the end of it, he then says something to him in a way that the person realizes that he is not trying to argue with him. Because if a person knows that you are trying to establish in a conversation the ascendancy of your argument, if he ever thinks that you are trying to establish that you are right, and he says something and you say, no, it's like this, and he keeps on saying something and you keep on, as I said, it's like a football match, then this becomes an argument. Then there is a barrier already. Baha'u'llah says we must not build barriers when we are teaching the faith. If ever the person thinks that you want to establish the fact that you are right, then he is going to have a psychological barrier there. He won't come to hear you. And even whatever you say, it goes over his head. He's not responsive. And he says, look at the master. He listens. He listens with such genuine care. And then, when his turn comes, he just says one or two little things in such a way that the person becomes affected by it. And he says, yes, this is a different point of view. And he does not rebel against it. There is no barriers. I have seen that in some gatherings when people are teaching, I've seen many people who are in firesides or public meetings, they teach the faith. And all they are interested to do, quite frankly, now I'm not criticizing anybody, but I think I've seen this, that all they're trying to do is to pour out their knowledge and impress the person with all the things they know and all the terminologies they know to use, you know. And they pour out so much from beginning to the end, it speaks about an hour maybe, or two, pouring out every knowledge he has. Well, this is, I think, not going to impress people. people will take it, may go home, and they may not come to you. But to attract somebody is when you give him the message with a spirit of humility. Very important, with a spirit of humility. Again, remember, when Baha'u'llah is with you, you can do it. But if you are alone, you can't do it. If you don't take Baha'u'llah with you, then you are going to become yourself and project yourself and your knowledge and all the rest of it. But when he is with you, one becomes very humble. Now, teaching is very important and time is very short for us, really. I mention this because the world conditions will make it imperative for us that we should now really go out and teach. Now, I believe that if every Baha'i takes to heart this suggestion that I made in here to you, that 1 hour a day you give to Baha'u'llah, in your own ways, devise your own ways. And personal teaching need not be done alone. You can do, two or three of you can gang together and teach. Really? Because often when you are two or three together, you can help. Somebody can open his home, somebody can make a cup of tea, somebody can talk, work together. But there is no need to organize yourself through committees. But just go two or three people together and do this personal teaching. And I know that in this community, in your country, people are very open. They are not like Europeans, who are so closed, reserved, who are having so many traditions that they must observe. This nation is very free. And you have some beautiful natives here, which I say, I'm sorry, I haven't been able to see them. I would have loved to see the natives, and I've seen one or two people here. And to me, they have a tremendous station in the faith. They are the people who have been under pressure and oppression, and the faith is going to bring them up into the open and give them, they are like little flowers which have been growing in the shade. Now the sun of Baha'u'llah is going to shine on them and make them very beautiful people. And you have this crowd amongst yourselves. And I believe that if all of us together determined to give 1, 2, 3 hours a day to Baha'u'llah for teaching actively, go out and if nothing happens, come home again. You've done your job. Just like that woman. And then put your trust. Another thing you can do, you can test Baha'u'llah. Try him. See what he'll do to you. Really, put him on the spot. Put him on the spot. Baha'u'llah says, if you arise, I will assist you. Take his word on his face value. I have seen some people who have done this, and they come back and they said it works. Shoghi Effendi says, let those who doubt, let them try. Well, you try this. Bring Baha'u'llah with you. Do all the little things we said, or not the little things, but the important things. Those points that I've been talking here since yesterday. Put them into practice for a while, and then do this. And the whole community will begin to become a new force. And I know that you are very blessed to have here marvelous institution of the counselors, a marvelous person who is here working with you, and the board members, who also are the embodiments of really detachment and love for you all. And what I've heard, you're so loved by the friends, that you have got everything to your advantage. When I said time is very short, I'll tell you a story here to just remind you of it. This is a Persian story again. And in order to tell you the story, I have to first bring you up to some ideas that you may not be familiar with. Some in Islam, it is said that on the day of judgment, they are going to have a big bridge set up. God will establish a huge bridge, long bridge, which is 70,000 miles or something long. And they say it is sharper than the sword, and it is hotter than fire, and it is thinner than a hair, and you have to walk on this. Why would you like that? And if you ever fall, if you've had it, you go down. You see? The fires will consume you right away. But if you could go the 70,000 miles on a thing, on a journey like this, which is as sharp as the sword, as hot as the fire, and as thin as the hair, then you're all right. And they say that everyone must pass through this when the day comes. Well, the story begins in here that there was a man who was a holy man. And he was a marvelous person, and he used to teach the faith and live the life in accordance with the teachings of Islam. But next door to him was a man who was really the opposite. He was a man of vices and full of vices. And in Islam, it is a commandment that every individual must tell, if you are a good man, you must help the bad man to live a good life. You have a right to go and tell him, why do you live like this? Come and live like me, for instance. Well, of course, this is forbidden in the faith, you know that. It's a good thing, otherwise we would be talking to each other quite a lot. Now, this man one night had a dream. This holy man had a dream one night. He dreamt that the day of judgment had come, and this huge, long bridge was set, and people were being questioned, and then they put on this bridge, and they had to go. And this man, of course, being a holy man and have lived his life all in accordance with the teachings of God, he had no trouble. He said, I went on this bridge like anything, just like walking in the big highway. For him, there was nothing. He went on. And he found this is great. Oh, it's a marvelous thing. I've lived a good life now. I'm now getting the results. And I go on this bridge so easily. No problem. Suddenly, as he was going along, he saw somebody pull the back of his coat to stop him. And of course, you know what happens if on such a bridge so thin, if somebody pushes you a little bit, you're going to fall down. He looked back. He said, what are you doing to me? Who are you? And he saw it was his neighbor. You know, that bad neighbor, that bad man. He said, why do you do this to me? He said, where are you going? Oh, he said, I'm going to heaven. I've lived a good life. Oh, he said, that's what you think. I am not letting you go to heaven. Why didn't you tell me? Why didn't you help me when I was, when you were my neighbor? Do you think I'm going to let you there or no? And he pulled him down. And the two of them went down, and the fires consumed them. That was the end of him. And he woke up. And he woke up and he realized the significance of this dream. And in the middle of night, he woke up his wife, and he said, this is what I've dreamt. I should have helped this man next door to me. I should have taught him the faith and helped him. And so he put on his coat and his clothes in the middle of night to go and tell him. His wife said, why are you doing it now? Just wait till tomorrow morning. He said, how do I know I'm going to live till tomorrow morning? I have no time. I must tell him. Now, I think this is really a very good story for us. And someone described hell being in the next life when all our friends come to us and they tell us, why didn't you tell me? That'll be hell. And I feel that this is true. We must really arise and tell everyone who comes across, anyone we see, we must give him the message, really. And then we must attract them to ourselves to teach them. There are two stages, you see. Attracting, giving him the message and attracting him and gradually teaching him the faith. We must not be in the habit of wanting things to happen instantly. You see, we are so much living in a world of instant things, you know, instant coffee, instant potatoes, instant things. You press the button and you things, of course, in America here it's like this, is it? You press the button and things will happen for you. Now, you cannot have instant Baha'is. You have to teach them, you have to spend time with them. That's why Abdul Baha says at least one person in a year you can bring into the faith. I remember, I'll tell you one story here, and just to give you an idea of how one has to be one teaches the faith with great wisdom. You have to use wisdom here. Now in Ireland, where we live, people are really devoted to Christianity. They are marvelous, marvelous people who have religion in their hearts and they are attached to religion. They're mostly Catholics. Beautiful people. And they live such a life. You remember yesterday I was telling you the story of the chandeliers, the beautiful crystal lamp hanging. They are there. They are not lighted, but they are there. And once they become Baha'is, they become marvelous Baha'is. Now, they are very attached to their faith. And you have to know how to teach them. You have to know how to teach them. If you suddenly go to them, have you heard of the Baha'i faith? Do you want me to tell you about the Baha'i faith? He runs away like as fast as you can think. He wouldn't want to hear it. Because he thinks this is something wrong. And this is very natural. You have to gradually cultivate them. We had a neighbor a few houses away. And my wife was very fond of her. And we were very fond of this woman. And we really began to pray for her. We thought this would be lovely if she becomes a Baha'i. But she was a very staunch Catholic. Her family were priests and so forth. Very staunch. So the first thing to do if you want to teach him is never tell him anything about the faith. You know? You just pray for him. And embrace him in your love, in your heart. And we did this. We had some children and she had some children and the children were playing together. And this woman would come to our house and see some Baha'i articles and she knew we were Baha'is. She would never dare to ask the question. She was telling us. I was frightened to say a word. Never. And for maybe 6 months or a year perhaps, not a mention was made of anything to do with the faith. We certainly weren't going to do it, but we knew that one day she's going to do something. And she was so agitated, she was telling us, she was agitating in her heart. Many a time she had come to ask us something. And she was frightened. And then she didn't. Now you won't know these things unless you are a staunch Roman Catholic. Beautiful people, beautiful. So one day, after a long time, she brought herself to the point of asking my wife, how do you teach your children? What is the principles that you teach your children with? She wanted to know. Bringing up children. Well, that's a good subject. And we knew that if she ever, we had talked about it together, and my wife knew this, that if she ever asks a question, we are not going to answer her in the first time. So my wife said, oh yes, yes, well, sometime I'll tell you. It's very important. You see, this is the wisdom of handling these people. If we just suddenly go to him and, oh gosh, yes, I'll tell you all about it, he's gone. No, we'll tell you about it. Very casual. And after about a month or so, we knew she's going to bring it up again. And it came up eventually that, oh, well, what about that thing you were going to tell me? Oh, yes, yes, I forgot about it. All right. And so eventually, she talked to him a little bit, not about the faith so much, but about the principles of child education, as Baha'is, you know it. And then she said that she was frightened after that. She told us. She wouldn't come and ask us anymore, and we knew this would happen. She wouldn't come near us again for a good while. But then she couldn't help it again. And eventually, I'll make it very short for you, she came and she asked this time about the faith. And there again, we knew we are not going to tell her right away. Oh no, well, my wife said, oh yes, well, I'll tell you sometime. Sometime I'll tell you about it. And then when the next time came, and after a while, all we gave her was a prayer book. Just give her a prayer book. That's the best thing you can give to a Roman Catholic, as an introduction to the faith. And she said that when she got this prayer book and she read some of the prayers, she couldn't sleep that night. And then she hid the prayer book away from her sight. You see, this is a very good thing that's happening. The forces are entering within her and the reactions are building up. Obviously, it's being affected already. And we knew that this will happen. And gradually, gradually, she comes forward. And she came and she asked, and then my wife told her about the faith in greater detail, gradually and gently, and gave her to read some of the writings, and so she almost was a Baha'i. And then, I'll tell you something that you must know, that, you know, in teaching the faith, Shoghi Effendi mentions that, you read the Advent of Divine Justice. He tells us, it makes us to understand that it is not wise always. Now this is not, mind you, a universal law, but it is very helpful in many cases. That when you're teaching the faith to somebody, you must teach him, yourself and your friends. That's all right, bring your friends to help. But you don't have necessarily to show him to the Baha'i community. Because the Baha'i community may have some Baha'is in them who by virtue, say for instance in this country or in America, I don't know what it is, I hear there's a lot of race prejudices in America, isn't it right? I hear that. Well, supposing you have a man, you are teaching him and he's white. And he's coming close to the faith or somehow. You're teaching him the faith and say, now let's go and see the Baha'i community. And then he sees all of them sitting there, they are all colored. Well, he's going to run away because he has prejudices. He's not a Baha'i yet. You see now? The prejudices that he has not yet gone. So we must not give them tests, unnecessary tests. And this is why Shaul Effendi says that when you teach the faith, you have to teach it with wisdom. You have to be sure who is going to be the right person to meet with that person because he's in his early stages. And so this lady had reached the point that she said, now I want to come to one of your meetings to hear about it. And she said, if I could be the one who would be speaking. So I said, all right, well, if she wants me to speak, let us arrange a meeting in some Irish friend's home and invite two or three Baha'is, and then I'll go and we can talk. So the night was set. And half an hour before we were due to leave to go to this house, because by then we have moved our residence from there, the host telephoned and said, you know, the house is full of people and a lot of Persians and others have come. They have heard that I was going. And the whole house is full. Now I knew this is bad for this lady. If she now comes up and sees this Baha'i community, the way we are, consisting of so many different backgrounds, she is going to probably go through a great unnecessary test. So I, I'll tell you what I did. I had an excuse not to go that night. And we cancelled the meeting. We arranged it some other night. These things are hints that we should bear in mind. These are because people have prejudices. They are not ready. Because now she is a marvelous Baha'i. Beautiful Baha'i. And all these stages are passed. You see, in England, for instance, there is a great deal of class distinction. In here, you don't have probably class distinction. You have color distinction. And the class prejudice is such a subtle thing. We have no English people amongst us, have we? I can say some things about them, can I? You know, the English people, all you have to do is to talk. Just talk. Or sometimes even my wife says there is no need to talk. You look at them and you know which class he belongs to. The way he looks, the way he sits, the way he looks at you. But as soon as he talks, definitely you know which class he belongs to. And then there is a barrier between the two. The barrier is so subtle that it doesn't show it. It's very polite and smiling at each other, but it's underneath, you can see through the smile, you can see a lot of barriers there right away. This is a great deal of prejudice there in that way. Now I remember we had a marvelous Baha'i teacher, Kathleen Hornell. She's passed away, a beautiful person, Lady Hornell. She was titled woman. And Lady Hornell was a great, wise teacher of the faith. And she had some people she was teaching in her home. But she never mixed up her contacts. The people she was teaching, she did not mix them up. She mixed them up in accordance with her class, shall we say. She was teaching a lady of high class, of a high society, very, very distinguished lady. And then she was teaching some of the laborers, dockers. She never let them see each other until they became Baha'i. I remember one day I was there, and this lady was there, and Lady Hornell was there, and I was there, and some others were there, and we were talking about the faith. And this lady, she was teaching Elizabeth Greaves, if any of you have ever heard her name. She was a marvelous woman. She's passed away. She became a beautiful Baha'i. She belonged to a higher society. Now, that night was her night. Tomorrow night was the night of the others. And I was sitting in the room and I suddenly saw behind the window walking John, who was one of the dockers, you know. And he had decided tonight he had nothing to do, and he thought, although it wasn't his night, but he thought he'll come tonight and drop in and see what Lady Hornell is doing. Well, as soon as I said to Lady Hornell, John is coming here, she got up and went to the door and said to John, she said, John, I'm very busy tonight. Would you mind to come tomorrow night? You don't mind, do you? Now you see, how many of us would think that way? Wisdom. And it was wise. If Lisbeth had seen others, this is going to be a Baha'i? Is this a Baha'i? And am I going to be a Baha'i? She has got still all the prejudices in her mind. She's not a Baha'i yet. To get rid of the prejudices. And this is why I feel there are many things. You should read the Advent of Divine Justice, really. This is a letter that Shoghi Effendi particularly wrote to the American Baha'is. After he gave us the 7-year plan to the American believers, he wrote the Advent of Divine Justice. Now, if you read that book, it gives you all the prerequisites for teaching, on learning and deepening in it. And now that I'm talking about deepening, let me talk a little bit about deepening, because it's a very important subject. I didn't mean to talk about this, but let us talk about a little bit about deepening. Deepening often is taken to mean that you must attend classes and learn and read. But often deepening, this is one form of deepening, which is not bad, and it may help to read, but I think the real deepening comes, the fruit of deepening, the sign of deepening, is when your love for Baha'u'llah increases. If you go to a study class and when you come out of it, if you find that your love is increasing, then you have deepened in the faith. But if you find only your knowledge has increased, then we must bring a balance in here. The balance is not right. Because the real deepening comes to us when we understand. In Arabic, there are two words which are very clear words, and they mean two different things. One is called ilm, which is knowledge, translated into knowledge. The other one is irfan. Irfan is very difficult to translate it into one word. It means understanding. Sometimes Shoghi Effendi has translated it as understanding. But it is really more than understanding. You can't just bring it in one word. It is knowledge. Irfan is knowledge plus, which results in understanding, recognition, penetration of your thoughts into mysteries. All these things together makes it irfan. Let us use the word in Arabic as it is, or understanding. Either we can call it understanding or Arabic. Now, the thing to do, the thing to learn, and knowledge is something that you acquire. You learn knowledge by reading and by studying things. And then your mind will store it, like a computer. And anytime you want it, it comes out again, back to you. And some people are very good at it. They have good memories. They act like as good computers. They learn from this and learn from that and learn from the other, and they add them together. They act like an encyclopedia sometimes. Well, it is good. Knowledge is very important, and we must have this. But really, it is not essential, in a sense, when you're comparing it with irfan. The goal of life is to acquire irfan. Irfan, let us call it understanding. And in order to acquire irfan, Baha'u'llah has told us what we should do. And I'm going to tell you exactly in a few minutes. But let me first say that there may be people who know a great deal about the faith. They have the knowledge of the faith. There may be great scholars of the faith. They may write books about the faith. They may know anything you ask them, he'll tell you where it is and where to find it. But this is not a great, it's not as great. It's not a great thing as great as having irfan. They are acting like encyclopedias, like computer something which has accumulated all his knowledge, and as Baha'u'llah says, they usually steal it from one another, you know, and they pride themselves in it. We have had many such people in the faith, or we have them probably, I don't know, scholars who write books, who say things, they know things. But the man who was Irfan, he may not be even educated. But you ask him anything, and it comes out of his heart. It wells out of the heart. The knowledge wells out of the heart of man. The knowledge of God wells out of the heart, just like a spring. Baha'u'llah has confirmed the Islamic saying that knowledge is a light which God throws in your heart. Baha'u'llah confirms this. He talks about it in the Kitab-e-Iqam. Knowledge is a light which God casts in your heart. What a strange place for knowledge. Because often when you say this to people, people say, well, the heart is not a place for knowledge. It's the mind which is a place for knowledge. And it is true. But how can the knowledge of God be cast in the heart of man? And this is what is the difference between knowledge, ilm, and irfan. Irfan, which is the recognition, which is the understanding, comes to the heart of man, and then the mind will pick it up and understand it. But it dawns in your heart, because Baha'u'llah says, your heart is the place, is my home. I'm paraphrasing it. He says, your heart is where I will come into it. He will not come into your mind, he'll come into your heart first. Heart is a place of love and warmth. We have two focal points in our bodies. One is our mind, which is the center of intellect, which is very important center. We are not trying to underestimate it or undervalue it. And the other focal point is the heart of man, which is the center of love and warmth. And Baha'u'llah says that God always comes to your heart. He says, this is my home. And many a times he says in the Hidden Words and other tablets, he says, many a times I came to your heart, my home. I found there was a stranger in it. And then I left. And you know who that stranger is? Ourself. Attachment to the things of this world. The most formidable form of that attachment is our own self. Attachment to our own self. The love of oneself. The ego. So, he says, I came many a time and you were not there, or the heart was full of the strangers. And then I left and I went. So you see, the knowledge of God comes into our hearts. And then the mind will pick it up and will understand it. Now this is what we should aim for as Baha'is, for deepening. That our hearts may become the recipient of the knowledge of God. Whether we have education or not, it doesn't matter. Whether we have knowledge or not, it doesn't matter. And Baha'u'llah tells us, what should we do that we may acquire this quality of irfan, understanding. If you want to know what he has said, read the opening passage of the Kitab-e-Iqam. He says, no man shall attain, I am paraphrasing his words, no man shall attain unto the shores of the sea of understanding. He uses the word irfan, which is translated into understanding. It's that word he has used. No one will ever acquire to understanding, the shores of the ocean of understanding, unless and until. Now if you ask the people, I want to understand, what shall I do? If you ask the people, they say, well, if you want to understand something, go to the university.